Aaron, Chris, super excited to dig just into acquisitions with you guys, figure out what you're doing. Obviously, you're locking up a ton of contracts. Anybody who's who follows Aaron on Instagram has seen Chris more than a few times ringing bells.
That's right.
And all that kind of stuff. Chris, you're the, what do we call you, a senior acquisitions manager here. You've been here for about as long as anybody, which means a year.
Yeah.
In the context of this business, which is a fun stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the growth stage.
Sure is.
Where you're just kind of figuring out how those things work, and I've been there too, and I'm kind of there now. Like a lot of the people in my company who've been there for the longest are like 2 years.
Okay. How long have you been around?
6 years.
Okay.
So just like you, I was kind of running around in circles
exactly.
for a while. Yeah. Didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And then just started grinding to level up over time. So yeah, it's like technically we've been around for 6 years. But it's
those early years.
Yeah, those early years, I was an idiot.
They don't count.
Yeah, and that's why we're making this, you know, because I want to help somebody who's just, you know, one or two steps behind
for
where
sure.
you are in your business right now. Because there's a lot of people out there trying to build a seven-figure wholesaling
yeah.
company. Mm-hmm. So we can talk about what that looks like.
Yeah.
And acquisitions, obviously, that's the spotlight of all of real estate investment. And I just, I just talked with Michaela and Stephanie. Yeah, we talked about dispositions, which is kind of underrated. Mm. A lot
it really
of the time.
Is.
So obviously dispositions, crazy important. I love the focus that you guys put on that. But well, they wouldn't have anything to do if it weren't for mm-hmm. this guy right here.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
So anyways, let's talk about acquisitions. I'd love to get into some of the details and everything. And just first, let's talk like high level metrics. How do you measure the performance of acquisitions of the company, and what does that look like?
How do we measure? There are a bunch of things. Now, you know, a lot of us have read the book Traction, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of us didn't like it. And I actually made a video on my Instagram not too long ago where I basically said, you know, if you read the book Traction, you didn't like it, it's because you don't have a team. You got to have a team to really understand it and relate to the book.
You have to have the problems that the book solves.
Mm. Yep.
Which are all the problems that you get, not when you don't have a team, but when you have a team and it's not working.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one thing is we, out of that book, and we could go on to some other stuff, you know, obviously we talk about KPIs, but there are a few things that we measure when it comes to, that we use from that book is the people analyzer. Mm. I love it. We actually just implemented this recently. And I have it on a spreadsheet, and we talked about spreadsheets. I'm very good at spreadsheets now. But
that's
we have
a new
our
skill.
We have core values as our title, and then we have the plus and minus and plus and minus slash. You know, are they bought into our core values at our company? And then we have it literally every single month. So we evaluate each individual by month to our core values. Mm-hmm. And then obviously if it's a plus, it means or so on. Now, if it's a negative and we've all, and all the people that have left us, I've looked at the people analyzer and we've saw that, they were in the red and they were never a good fit. So that's one thing. We also do a scorecard that's in the book, right? Scorecard. And that's just four to five things that we want to see. You know, because you monitor it per week. So, you know, how many leads did you get assigned to? How many contracts? And I don't know exactly, but I know it's like how many contracts, how many closed, how much revenue, right? What we do monitor is some of our KPIs. We want 2 contracts a week. It's nothing too crazy, but with our type of leads that we're getting, PPC, that's not a hard task to really come up with, right? So we want 2 contracts a week. That's 8 contracts a month. With that being said, contracts are going to fall out. But with a strong discipline team, obviously our close rates have gone up. So then we want to cut that in half, and we want about 5 deals closing the following month. And then we want to average nationwide right now, it's about 12 to 15. If it's in our backyard, it's a little bit more. But we want at least about 12 to 15,000. So you could do the math. We want 80,000 per rep per month. And then obviously if they go off track, we figure out, okay, what's going on? And you figure that out by the scorecard. You know, okay, for example, I had one of my reps out there, you might hear this. But I think it's a great example. What we saw, and that, because that's another thing on our scorecard, are offers. How many offers have gone out? And it was like, if we're not hitting our contract goal, I'll you know, see how many offers have gone out. So you just do backwards, right? And mm-hmm. it's funny. So we were looking at it. So I had my one-on-ones, and we do 2 one-on-ones every single month. And I call them coaching calls, right? or like mentor, coach, and I actually have right here on my whiteboard, stop doing, start mentoring, coaching, and recruiting. And that's been my kind of like job now since I'm not the one calling the leads. So what I want to do is I want to coach him, right? So we look at a scorecard, and I was looking at my one of our, and he's a great, he's crushing it. But I look back and I said, hey, we didn't hit our contract goal for the week. Yeah, I think he got like one contract. And I said, all right, so let's see where it's going wrong. I saw that he made little offers. You know, we compared him to other acquisition reps, made little offers. And I thought it was a typo. As a matter of fact, I go to my admin, I was like, hey, and I was like, what's happening here? I think Michaela was in on the meeting, and she said, no, that those are the right numbers. So I look at my acquisition guy. I said, all right, we need to start making more offers. And literally the next week, he made more offers. He got six contracts in that week. So hopefully I answered your question. That is those are a couple ways that we do evaluate our acquisition reps. And obviously Chris might have a point of view of how we do that.
I think the only thing to add is we like to look at the talk time as well, right? Yes. And quality conversations, right? People can be making these dials, but not really having these quality conversations, which is what we're all looking for. Mm-hmm. So tracking that is super important. And that usually reflects into the talk time. If you're having good quality conversations, they're 10 minutes or more. And we want to, the longer the talk time, the more likely you are to get that offer.
Yeah, no, totally understood. That's super neat. Something that I always have to remind myself of is you pay based on the result. You hold people accountable to the process. Mm. Sounds like you're talking a lot about like holding accountable to the process, right? Because a lot of people, like I have clients that'll say like, I don't need to do that stuff because I pay them commission. So they should do all that anyways, right? Which sounds good until you actually... go through it and realize like it doesn't happen, right?
Yeah.
Like, people won't do what's in their best interest.
For sure.
If they're not held accountable to it. Like just like, you know, somebody who wants to quit smoking can want to quit smoking so they don't get cancer. That doesn't mean they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Because people need help accomplishing their goals.
One thing that just popped up and something that, you know, I'm always trying to get better at is a deeper why. Right. And I think that really goes into, because I'm here to be a servant to my team. Right. And I'm going to always try to do my best to be a servant. Right. And by doing that, if they don't hit their numbers, you know, what, and again, what we're always trying to focus on is, okay, if we didn't hit our numbers, do you remember that you wanted to do X? Do you remember you wanted to hit this goal, this target? And if you put it in that aspect of, obviously this is not about because we give you commission for XYZ, but it's like, why that commission is for something. Mm-hmm. We all want to make money, but why do we want to make the money? The money's for a deeper why we're all here. We make a funny joke, and I know you said you had a ping pong table at your office, but we always make a joke here is that we don't have a ping pong table here because you're here for a purpose. You're here to kick some butt, to go up back out to the world to fulfill your deeper why. So when you're here, it's all about business, kicking mass and butt, being ruthless, having resilience, having ownership, and then that accountability that we just talked about. So we're always really trying to dig into that deeper why. And obviously I could always do better, and I'm always trying to get better at that. So
yeah, and we found like the best people, I mean, we all know the top performers, they want to be held accountable. So like, yes, they should be doing that for their best interests, but any top performer wants to keep that, track those numbers. I want to beat my numbers last week, you know, so I want to be able to see that, keep myself accountable. And we all slip sometimes, but it's important to visualize that. And I think it's, for me, it's been a big, one of my favorite things of looking at that in our morning huddles. We're seeing our numbers. This week has been tough for me. I haven't been able to hit those numbers, but today's going to be different, right? It's a conversation that we're constantly having. And if you don't track those, you those things fall through the cracks.
Totally understood. One of those numbers in my industry that's usually really important is how many leads does it take for us to get a contract? Obviously, all those other things contribute to that, right? We got to be making dials.
Yeah.
We have having talk time, stuff like that. What do you guys find is realistic? And how do you set that benchmark for what realistic is?
I'm going to let him talk.
I know just based off of the conversation that I've had with Aaron, I think the amount of... Your question was how many leads it takes to get to a contract, right? For us, our minimum, it's like we have 75 dials. If you don't have 75 dials, if you don't have a contract, you need to be including getting more dials. But I think right now what we're at, 12 leads to a contract, 10 to 12 leads to a contract, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing we always look for, and this is something Chris really embodies, and there's two things, and that's a good attitude and hard work. Mm-hmm. And that's what why he stuck around with us for so long. He has a good attitude and hard work, right? It's funny, Chris, being as, you know, we went from a small office to a larger office, starting to build that team, starting to build that culture that we talk about. And so, and let's just, long story short, that small office and small team that we had is no longer with us. The one person that is with us is Chris. And he got to kind of see some of that growth. I remember when we were with that small team, we had to, one, ask for grace because a lot of things were changing, right? We were growing. We were bringing on Brandon to just kidding. We were bringing in.
It's really
just,
when we started working together. That's when everybody quit.
Yep.
And
they missed the boat, man.
There was definitely a lot of accountability that the old team couldn't handle, right? And I'm sure you as a business owner have felt that as well, right? But the cool thing is now, and I've heard one of my mentors say this, and he's like, I've never had to fire anybody. And I was like, what do you mean you have not had to fire anybody? If your standards are high and your values are there and they're not meeting up to your standard, you just have to ask them a simple question. And usually they'll, unfortunately and fortunately, leave on their own. So I haven't had to fire somebody in actually a good couple months now.
They just quit.
They just quit because obviously we're looking for excellence, right? It's kind of like when I look for candidates and I got 20 candidates coming a day, which we are doing as I was explaining to you earlier. And I don't, you know, obviously we're looking for the best of the best. And so obviously our hiring process has gotten a lot better. Chris has been a great right-hand guy to really help and filter those people, hold those people's standards high, really embody our core values. Me and him get to collaborate and talk about a lot of times when someone will come in, we realize that our sales process, every company should have a sales process, and we have a sales process, and we've seen people who don't embody the sales process and they want to go cowboy stuff, crash and burn hard. Mm-hmm. But if they could come in and they could have a growth mindset and they embody our sales process and bring in the value, obviously their skill set of obviously that the reason why we hired them, they're able to skyrocket and start hitting their numbers quick.
For sure.
Oh, that's super cool. Chris, I'd love to ask you what that process looks like. Let's start at the very beginning. So PPC lead comes in. How do you even know that happened? Well, and what happens next?
Yeah, no, so first off, I mean, we all get a notification. Everybody on the sales floor gets a notification. We kind of, it's a thing that we do here at the office because of Aaron. When something comes in, new lead, we all just like to say it, right?
Just one of those culture things.
Urgency, baby.
Like, well, you come here for the first day, you're like, what is everybody doing? But then after a year, you're like, this is just life. This is how it goes. Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, even on some of the things that I've seen, videos that you've made, it's speed to lead, right? It's a big thing that we have. We want to get to it as fast as possible. So I mean, me and Jonathan out there, we're fighting to get them on the line. But once we get them onto the line, then we just start going through our sales process, asking them the four pillars of motivation, trying to really dig deep and see if this is going to be a good fit and how we can really help. So that's pretty much it. But I think the main thing is speed to lead, just like getting them on the phone as fast as possible. Yeah. I mean, we get the notification and we're dialing them 3 times back to back, me and Jonathan, right? As of right now. So
different numbers.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Multiple tries.
We're blowing them up constantly.
So you say the most important part of your sales process is what happens within the first few minutes of
seconds,
a lead coming in.
Seconds, yeah.
Seconds. Mm. And that's honestly something like every time we go, because you guys, according to our whole client metrics, you stack up pretty well in terms of acquisitions performance. It's part of the reason I'm here. Mm. If you guys really sucked, you wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right.
So you do well, right? So I have faith that what you're talking about is really real, really true. And every other conversation I've had like this, that is such a huge piece of the process. I think people struggle to actually tangibly make it happen. Mm. What would you say, and this question is for either of you, if we're talking about speed to getting to new leads, how have you ever had a time where you struggled with that before? Mm. Like, was there a time where you weren't performing, or have you just always had this down?
I could say for me, no. Like, I mean, I think it goes down to what he was saying earlier, like the deeper why. Like, when a lead comes in, it's not necessarily like a lead just came in, that's something that's going to put food on the table, right? That to get me to my next goal, right? So it's like, if you have to have that in you, and once you see that, that's money ringing, you know? And yeah, knowing what happens on the back end, we're fortunate enough to have somebody to kind of fill us in on those things. We spend a lot of money for these types of leads, so we need to take care of them. It's not something that we just throw off and like, I'll get to it later. Like, you shouldn't really be here if that's your mindset, you know?
Yeah. So it sounds like for you, you're saying a big piece of this, in your opinion, is the right person with the right motivation. They're fast to get to the leads. Not necessarily, maybe like we say, like hold accountable to the process. That's mm-hmm. important.
Right.
Right. But the right person theoretically would be motivated themselves to do that.
100%. Even without that accountability. That's the culture that we're bringing in here as well. Like, we want them to be able to come in here and have that type of motivation. Yeah, we're going to hold them to those standards. But yeah, I mean, you're getting a high dollar, high value lead that just came in. You better be on that.
Yeah. What did you do before this, Chris?
Here, I've been a realtor for going on 4 years now. So I was doing real estate, doing a lot of investments as well.
Were you really connected to this deeper why before you started working here?
Yeah, no, definitely. Before real estate, I mean, I was in the restaurant industry. I was a server. Always had real estate on my mind. But yeah, I've always had large goals. And I feel like, you know, we all know real estate is one of the driving forces to, you know, build that generational wealth and get that cycle of poverty out of your family tree. So yeah, that's always been my deeper why. You have to. I feel like in sales, if you don't have a why, you're in for a treat, because you go through it. You know, you go through those roller coasters, and if you don't have anything to anchor you, you're not gonna last.
Hmm. Yeah. No, that's super fair. Hmm. It's very interesting. So speed to lead, and then the four pillars. Hmm.
Yeah, so there's two things. One thing, what I like actually, so last month our contact rate was a little off. One thing I really liked is you got to surround yourself and you got to build a team that actually gives a crap, cares, has passion for these leads. Chris, he saw that and he was like almost hurt. And he said, I don't like that. And he changed, and he's like, he went in and he got the other acquisition guy together. He's like, all right, let's pound these leads, let's get in contact with these leads. So that's something too that obviously fires me up. One thing too is obviously you want to use technology to get as fast to these leads as possible. So we have a CRM that when a lead comes in, it sends an automatic text to them without like 0 seconds. They submit, they get a text.
Always going to be faster than a human could possibly be, right, even in the best of scenarios.
Yep. And the text literally says, you know, hey, I saw you fill out a form. I'm calling you right now if you find an unknown number, right? And I know you know that message, but it really helps out.
Great idea, as long as you actually do it. Otherwise, you set the stage for how bad you are at doing what you say you're going to do from minute number one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so obviously that goes out to them. And then we want to contact that lead in 60 seconds or less. One thing we did talk about, and I know a lot of people talk about this a lot, is obviously nights and weekends, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's probably where the contact rate goes down a little bit, and that's fine. But when we're in office, you know, that's like I said, we're here from 8 to 5, and we still keep those leads going after hours because we know the cost per lead's still great. So that's another thing too, is keep it on after hours, even when people are still living their deeper whys, living their life, and that's fine. Obviously we just really require them to answer the phones here, and we're really good at that. So speed to lead, boom, they answer it. And then it's also a sales process of already assuming that lead's ready to go. That seller's ready to go, right? It's not a cold call or text lead, some type of cold marketing. That's why we love these leads, because you could lock them up on the first call if possible, right? So that's another thing too, is you gotta, and we talked about that already in our intro, is you gotta know how to talk to these leads or you're gonna waste a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Do you know how many days it takes to get a lead under contract?
I mean,
Do you have the stat, like average or median?
Yeah. It's 3 to 5. 3 to 5 days. Unless they get the lead on the first call.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. Which
is happens pretty often, right? It comes in, we get on the phone with them within seconds, we're on the call with them for 45, an hour and a half, and we get the contract right then and there. Mm-hmm.
And when you say pretty often, are we talking like Is this 10% of your contracts, 30%?
I wouldn't be able to say.
It's up. I wouldn't know the actual numbers, but it's definitely up there. It's probably like 40%.
But it's happens. It's
a lot. Okay, so that's like
it
almost
weekly.
As much as you get.
Yeah, it happens weekly. Yeah, I believe, and I think for Jonathan's at that stage as well, if I get a PPC lead that is ready to go, right? They're ready to go, and I get on the phone with them, we're locking it up right there. Like, it's no question about it. I have the confidence in what we do that's what's happening. There's other factors, right? There's a bunch of things that they can't sign right then and there, which is kind of out of our control. But if we get on the phone with them, we're locking it up.
It's funny. So we have training every single day. Okay. Okay, let me see if I remember. I actually have a spreadsheet.
Good job.
They keep me accountable.
For everybody's information, the reason the spreadsheet thing's coming up is because I learned that that's a phony. apparently, Michaela, what's it called? This certificate of graduation.
It's half my wife.
Yeah, it's apparently Michaela did the spreadsheets class. Not fully Aaron, but you learned the skills after college.
That's so right.
It's still worth it.
And I do hold it myself accountable. Actually, I do spreadsheets because it's my life data, right? Did I go to the gym today? I literally track what I do. Anyways, trainings. So like yesterday was call audits. Today's role play. Thursday, I forgot what Thursday is, and then Friday is like comp training. Mm-hmm. And I make sure I do that. I try to do that every day if I can. And I'll play yes, I did it. Anyways, today was supposed to be role play. Matter of fact, I held off role play because I thought maybe we'd get that on recording because I wanted to show you because what we do, and I didn't, because I know that was part of what the email you sent me. But one thing we do with these leads is, again, when you're negotiating, you got to create urgency, maybe a little bit of scarcity. That's how you get those one call closes, right? By creating that, that's how you get those one call closes, right? Mm-hmm. By not moving forward with an actual close until you know they're actually fresh and hot and ready, and then you could go in and take them out of the oven and eat them. So
yeah, but I think that's to their point. The earlier question that you asked, like why these leads are so important, is because a lot of them, there's a possibility that you're going to get them under contract right then and there. So like that, I feel like in itself should be the number one reason why you get on them as quickly as possible, or else they're going to call me and I'm going to do it, you know? So that's a big, big factor for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. You said, Aaron, that you're basically not trying to do business with these people until like you verified that it's right. I can't remember exactly what words you said. And I've heard, like, just know I'm coming at this from like the like never been in a seller's house situation. So I'm just really curious to dig deeper into it because I've heard a lot of different things from different people. Like one person we both know is Cody Hoffein. Love Cody. Their team is also one of our top performers over time. They have this rule where like they don't make offers basically. And basically what Mark says is, Mark is Cody's business partner. He says like, I'm not in the business of making offers. I'm in the business of doing deals. So it's a lot of like hypothetical, like, okay, well, so it sounds like if I could get you that amount of money,
you
might be
price.
Interested in putting a deal together today. And like, but when I'm not like saying this is my number or something like that. But I also know that making offers is something that you guys track. Like what's your mindset on this? Cause some people are in the camp of like, the more offers you make, the more deals are due.
For sure.
And other people are in the camp of, I'm not going to make an offer unless I know it's going to be accepted.
Mm. For sure.
And I want to hold my number close because if I put my number out there, then they have what they want from me and they won't care about me anymore.
Yeah.
Where are you guys at and how do you do your process?
So I guess when it comes to offer, it's not necessarily, let's rephrase it and give it the definition of an offer.
Yeah.
An offer is not saying, hey, Brandon, I'm going to give you $30,000 for this house. Mm-hmm. Take it or leave it, right? That's not I wouldn't call that an offer in our sales process. It's more of a, you know, did we get to the numbers part, right? Did we have the full process?
Got it. So maybe there was no like official offer given. It was just, did we talk about numbers?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Did we get to the full, did we talk about that? And, you know, did we give a range or like, did we talk about ranges? Did we talk about what another investor might pay for something like this, right? We always use third parties. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that absolutely makes sense. I'm curious to talk about lead managers. Obviously, Chris, these leads come in, you're going right to them. Mm. And different people have different ways of building their business. I know Aaron, you and I both know a lot of people that are fans of using lead managers in their business. Tell me about what went into your choice to not have a lead manager in between the marketing and acquisitions.
Oh, yeah. That's, not a fan of lead managers. Now, obviously, there are different types of, you know, philosophies out there, right? You know, some people use VAs. Some people call them junior acquisitions. Some people call lead managers, but they're in-house American side, right?
There's a huge range of quality for those few things that you mentioned.
Yeah, 100%. And for me, like I when I'm hiring, especially at the size of my company right now, when I'm hiring, I'm looking for closers. Like I want a closer. If I'm dealing with inbound marketing, I want closers. Now, obviously, the lead comes in, it goes to maybe a lead manager to do follow-up. I think the amount of passing around a lead loses its touch, loses its warmth of that lead. Somebody, because how I see it, I mean, you're here from 8 to 5. You're in the office 8 to 5. You're going through your CRM. You're calling, you know, you could be calling over 100 dials a day. Just trying to get somebody on the phone some days, right? And then also they got their follow-up. They got their pipe. We do a lot of pipeline pickups. We're always figuring out what leads are in the end zone. They're doing the exact same thing a lead manager would do, and that's following up, trying to find leads in the CRM, closing deals, right? So they're doing the same exact thing as a lead manager would do. So basically, when you ask me why don't you get a lead manager, it's because that's my acquisition guy already. They're the ones going through the pipe. They're looking through the CRM for leads. They're doing their follow up, and also with their follow up, they're able to follow up with each their pipe to build the overtime relationship because our follow up game is strong, right? Mm. So I just don't see a point. I mean, they're making over $100 a day some days unless they're having great long quality conversations to get contracts. Mm-hmm. For appointments or whatever, right? But if I had them on the field maybe every day and they're going house to house, maybe that would make sense. Mm. If we're just kind of shooting the crap here, maybe that would make sense because now they're not on the phones going through it, but we're very good at closing deals over the phone. That's like our motto. That's the way we do things here. We close the deal over the phone. So they're on the phone all day anyways. But yeah, if they're at the house, that might make a little more sense. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, and I think it makes it easier for how we do it is because we have a system and process in place so that we know how to properly manage the leads, right? Like it goes back again, taking extreme ownership. The top performers are going to have a clean pipe. They're going to have a clean CRM to look at every day, know how to manage those specific leads, what's hot, what's warm, what's cold. We do it. We take ownership of our leads. Once we, get ownership of those leads. I think that makes it a lot easier of knowing how to properly do it and manage them day to day.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I don't disagree with you guys. I'm just going to play devil's advocate.
Yeah, for sure. What I do. Well, I mean, we're it's a very in our industry, it's a very controversial topic, right? Yeah. A lot of people say, "Oh, you need a lead manager? What are you talking about?" You know, and it's just something I don't agree with.
Well, and you're the weird guy, I think.
Yeah,
100%. In this overall, ironically, a lot of the clients that I've spoken to that are our highest performers, for the most part, don't use lead managers on the front end, sometimes on the back end when leads go cold or something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
We could talk about that as a separate thing. So I think you're unusual amongst the industry as a whole, but pretty common amongst some of our most successful clients. Mm. But that considered, I'm curious, back when you were doing tons of cold calling, texting, did you have lead managers at that point?
I did.
You did?
I had a VA lead manager. One or two, actually.
Okay. Yeah, so the journey of what you've done is actually pretty similar to a lot of people. Because what people notice is a lead manager is there to shield acquisitions from all the crap you get from marketing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's essentially their job. Because acquisitions people get really demotivated when they deal with bad lead after bad lead after bad lead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not actually motivated.
But when they use Bateman Collective, all these leads are quality, man. They're quality. Yeah.
I'm glad you remembered the script, Chris. That's awesome. That's I was worried you wouldn't come in at the right time. That's super good. it's true though. If you need 40 or 60 or 80 leads to a contract, then that's a lot of work to filter through those. If you have 10 or 12, I'm curious because you still get sometimes we work with teams that are used to having a lead manager and then they take it out and then they're like, oh no, this lead has the wrong phone number. like, as an acquisitions manager, I feel super offended and like this, I should never have to deal with this or something. I'm sure you get like, everybody gets that kind of stuff. Like usually about 15% of leads are complete bogus in some way or another. And then, you know, you work down the funnel, some are better than others. Not all leads are created equal. We know that for sure. But how do you feel about like the spread of quality that you get? Do you feel like it's too much and you end up wasting a lot of time with leads that aren't as good? Or does it feel like a productive use of your time?
No, definitely not. Most of our leads are quality. And, you know, we don't have a lead manager, but like, for instance, if we have a lead that has the wrong phone number, we just push it to a VA, hey, skip trace this lead. And she puts the right phone numbers in. I put in my follow-up for the next day and call with the right number. I mean, I just keep moving on to the ones that have the right number. You know, it's just super simple. It's not that hard. I think we have some the quality leads and we're doing pretty well.
We had, I did an interview. Were you on the interview? Yeah, I think it was you. So I'll have a shadow day and I'll have a guy come in and this guy came from the solar industry, and what he did is he went door knocking and what he would do is he would like set up, like he'd be like a lead manager. He would set up for the closer and then he'd get somebody, you know, guy opens, yes, I would like solar. He would call his closer and he would come over and close the deal. So anyway, so I guess, I don't know, the guy maybe didn't like solar or something. And so he applied for here and I kind of liked him. He seemed like a sharp dude, sharp individual, young individual. Anyways, comes in here. He goes through the whole normal shadow day, goes in for our role play exercise that we do part of our exercise. And I do bring Chris in. And sometimes I'll bring either or in just to kind of give me a second opinion when we bring somebody on the team. And we go through our role play, and every single time after the role play, he would always say, hey, Mr. Seller, would you like me to have somebody call you? He couldn't get over the fact of setting it up. So what we do is we pause the role play. We'll coach him and we'll tell him like, hey, I know that's what you do, but I need you to be able to close the deal. Right. And so let's go again. Did the same exact thing. And he set it up. Right. And he just froze and stopped. But that's
coachability.
Well, that's what we, and so we, that's how we could disqualify people. So I thought it was pretty funny to see that.
Yeah. And I think to another point, like it makes it easier for us when we're going through these leads that maybe aren't high quality. We have here, at least we have the discretion to know we qualify these leads. So when we know that this isn't a lead, we get them out of our CRM as quickly as possible. Right. Yeah. So like we have that, the closer is going to have the ability to differentiate if this is going to go to the finish line or not. Yeah. So when we get those types of leads, that's fine. That's good. Right. You just get him out and he's not going to occupy my time for the next day. Right. We just keep it moving.
Yes. Okay. That makes a ton of sense. So it sounds like you do okay without lead managers. You can deal with the leads of varying qualities. That's really good. What you just explained is something that we've found. It's interesting. So I'll give some examples here. I worked with a company that was going from like a lot of cold calling and they switched to mostly inbound marketing, kind of like you guys did.
Yeah, for sure.
What happened with them, they were running like in-person appointments, so a little bit different. They got a ton of PPC leads over a period of a few months and they ended up just not getting that many appointments from those leads. And when we really got down to it, what was happening was they were overqualifying them. They just changed how they're qualifying leads, and then they started closing way, way more deals because they were going on appointments more often. And we noticed that a lot of our clients, especially that are used to like colder leads, they overqualify PPC leads. And often it's just based on like this instinct that some acquisitions people have or think they have and don't actually have, that like this is a good seller, it can get to the finish line or it won't. I know you guys perform really well. So what you're saying, like if it's done right, can make sense. But what do you feel about like qualification? And can you help me understand like when do you qualify a lead? When do you not qualify that lead? How do you know it's worthy of your time or that it's not worthy of your time? Like what does that process look like?
It comes down to asking the right questions, man. It's really not how great the salesman is. It's just how the prospect answers the right questions. So that's really what it comes down to. Asking these questions in the right way and hearing their responses, that's how we differentiate who's quality and who's not.
What's the right question? Give an example.
I mean, as simple as, you know, going down the four pillars, what's their motivation? What's their why? And not just asking it and moving on to the next part of your script, but really understanding what that means. That in itself can be a 40-minute call of why they're selling.
Yeah. And obviously, like, a lot of people who are really skilled in things like to, like, downplay, like, oh, this is really easy, you just do this. Because you're just like, oh, it's not even a good salesperson. You just ask the right questions. But what you just told me tells me you're a good salesperson. The fact that you could ask one question and that could be 40 minutes of your call.
Yeah.
It's not about the first question. It's about, like, the follow-up questions on what the person says. So it sounds like you'd dig deep into, like, why they even submitted the form.
Right.
I imagine that's a different conversation than you're used to with any cold call leads or something like that, because you can actually ask them that.
Yeah.
Try to ask that to somebody that you just cold called. They'd be like, well, you called me.
Yeah.
I didn't ask for this.
Yeah.
So it's a different conversation.
Yeah. You're able to peel back those layers, man. So yeah, I think that just really digging deep on each individual pillar gets you that qualification.
Let's just say, let's talk about where price comes in. A lot of people like to throw in price early in the conversation and say something like, what kind of price do you want for your home? Mm. And then based on where that number comes in, they say it's a good lead or it's a bad lead. Mm. What's your opinion on that?
I say it's always a smokescreen. Yeah, you ask them what they want, they're always going to want the world, but they end up taking $150,000 less. So we don't really qualify based off what they're asking as far as asking price goes.
Okay.
We always look at it as a smokescreen, for sure.
Okay. Was that something that was natural to you, or is that something that's been trained into you?
Definitely trained. Yeah, definitely trained in, for sure. We kind of really tried to nail that in early with these people, that it's always going to be a smokescreen. Like the price for our PPC leads, they give what they think the house is worth, $220, for example, but we end up getting it for $70. You know, so it's always like, don't take that. Take that at face value, you know, like it's not really what they're willing to take.
Yeah, one thing with the when a PPC lead comes in, one tactic that we do is as soon as you get on the phone, hey, call, I saw you fill out a form. Hey, you still looking to sell that house? Yes, perfect. Hey, did I catch you bad time? Obviously, pull away. No, I could talk right now. Awesome. Hey, you know, if we right off the bat, hey, if we could, you know, get you a no hassle sale, what were you already hoping to sell the property for? Mm-hmm. Right. We want to get the price out of them, see if we get it sooner than later. Because with these PPC leads, they're just going to tell you, right? It's not a magic trick, it's no manipulation. They're just going to tell you, right? We're the buyer, they're the seller. I would say 90% of the time, they're going to give you the price. Perfect. Then you go down your normal pillars. Perfect. Hey, looks like a great property. Why are you even looking to sell it? Boom, motivation, go down some other pillars, make sure you knock out your deal killers. We want to make sure we nail out, hey, you know, and then obviously you ask your price again, if we could do this, this, and this, you know. Another thing too is that I always like to stress is before you close the deal, say, hey, if we could do that price, is okay if I tell you how the process is going to go? Mm. And then boom, you're talking about the price process, because obviously next steps are always scary. All right, a lot of times people haven't bought, sold properties. This might be their first, second, you know, time ever selling a property. So you want to make sure you kind of explain to them, hey, if we get this done for you, what we're going to do is, you know, I'm going to send you the agreement. We don't say contract, we say agreement, because it's more, I don't know, it's not as harsh, right?
It's a good word for the same thing.
It's a contract after they sign it. And so we send them the agreement, and I say, hey, and then one of our project managers, which is one of our dispo teams, they're going to be reaching out, you know, obviously to tell you XYZ. You're going to go with the title. We want to make sure we get a good clean title report back. Boom, boom, boom. Does that make sense? Yeah. Awesome. And then we try to go in for the kill, going for the close. Once they get the close, now they already know the process, what's going to happen after they send the agreement. The agreement gets signed. Boom. And then we have a whole process. It does go to our disposition manager. Obviously, they reach out and do next steps from there.
Mm-hmm.
So
totally,
we
understand.
Want that review.
So that's the whole process. You just laid it out, detail for detail.
Mm-hmm.
That's
the only thing that I would add to is another qualifying thing is what Aaron always likes to say is stress testing that.
Hmm.
We agree to a number, but before I'm going to send out an agreement, I want to stress test on, are we doing business today, right? Before I even give my number out, I need to know, are we doing business today, or do you still need to talk to your wife? If they still need to talk to the wife, I wouldn't be even talking about numbers yet. But, or they need to send it over to the attorney before they sign. Okay, well, we're not going to talk about numbers until we get them on the phone, right? Yeah. Or are they going to sleep on it? Like old school people, they like to sleep on it for a little while. Then I'm going to hold my number back, right? I'm going to stress test that until I know without a doubt that they're going to be on the line with me as we go over the agreement together and sign it right then and there. If I can't feel confident in that, I'm not going to send it out.
Did you have that skill before you worked here?
No. Definitely learned here for sure.
What do you think is the biggest thing that contributed to you learning that?
The training. I mean, definitely the leadership for sure. The different
daily
tactics.
Sales training is more than most companies do.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, man. The training all day. It's definitely tailored my sales approach. Big time. So yeah, training is a big help for sure.
A lot of people don't do it.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and I think role play. I mean, I see a lot of people do it, but a lot of time it's underrated. People get a little nervous.
I don't think anybody really likes role play.
I mean, I like it. I enjoy it.
Okay.
Well, there's a theory, not a theory. There is a, I don't even know the word I'm going to use, but anyways, there's a way to do role play, right? And when you do the role play, and if you ever want to practice role play, you know, you have your seller and you got your prospect and you got your acquisition person, right? The seller, you know, let's say I wanted to train him on something, right? I want to be the seller. He's going to be the acquisition person. As a seller, you want to give short responses, right? So it's basically, hey, call the lead. He calls you. Hey, can I call you? It should be always short responses because what you're doing, you're training him to basically ask questions, ask good questions. So even if I give you a short response, I want you to be able to, stealth mismatch, right? I want you to be able to know how to respond with a question and dig deep and peel back the layers, even on my short questions. Mm-hmm. So by doing that, it's really easy with somebody who knows how to talk. If they could just talk, now you're just active listening, you're leaning in,
yeah,
and you're able to talk. So it's a good way to help with the role play.
Yeah, because the laydowns, I mean, they're laydowns. You know, pretty much if you get a good quality lead and they're ready to go, 9 out of 10 times anybody could really just lock it up if they're ready to just give their house away, right? But really, like you said, digging deep is super important, and that's why I like role play so much, because it sparks the conversation, at least in our office. We don't just role play and then move on to the next person. It's really having a conversation about that specific problem or objection that we're trying to overcome right then and there. So I think it's great, and we see a huge difference from our new people on from when they first start after doing the role play. They're always going to be super, super nervous, but as time progresses, I mean, they crush it. Mm-hmm.
Well, it becomes super normal,
yeah,
over time too. Mm-hmm. So if we were to break down like all the training things that have helped you develop these skills, mm-hmm, would you say role play is number one for you, or is there something else that happens specifically in training?
Yeah, role play. We just actually got done with a really cool book, and it's the Sandler Rules, 49 Rules of the Sandler Way. And every day we're reading a rule. And then in our morning high puddles, we talk about that rule as a collective, what that rule meant to us, and have those types of conversations. But just things like that, having the one-on-ones for sure. We've done, you know, even in our onboarding, we have some really good training just about real estate investing in general. So yeah, I would say the role plays and the one-on-one coaching calls, call recordings. We like to list. I like to break down the call for sure. Hearing where you failed, it's great. Because then we have those conversations, not of course correct, and then take that into the rest of your day.
So. Call audits are huge, huge. You could, as a business owner, you could lose millions and millions of dollars if you don't audit your calls. And also with acquisition people, usually as time goes on, they nail the process down, but mostly with the new people, because for the first 3 days, we do a call audit every single day for them, but I had a guy that was with us, and he kind of fell flat on his face, and we were wondering, why aren't you getting the results that you need, right? So we'd go listen to his calls, and right off the bat, I just asked, why did you say that? When they said this, why didn't you dig deeper? And I would ask probably like 5 times, why did you say this? Why did you say this? He just totally cowboyed the entire thing rather than sticking to a process. When I say a process, I'm not saying script. I'm saying a process. Something that I always draw a picture for my guys, that there's a process. Intro to close, very important questions. And then you got your seller dance, and you got where you could cut off the, obviously, process to follow up, right? Mm. And right off the bat, I knew why he was failing and he wasn't getting the results that he was looking for. because he wasn't sticking to the sales process that we know is proven a way to close deals here.
So. Yeah, the call audit is definitely a really big proponent. I love that. Seeing where we failed and being a part of the call out for someone else, right? I mean, if you're teaching, you're also learning as well and just really embodying what you're telling them.
You help with that too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. We like to get all of the input, right?
Yeah, totally understood. Is there anything else that you think contributes to the quality of your acquisitions? We talked about training, structure,
mindset,
time to
baby.
Lead.
Yeah.
Mindset.
Yeah, the All mindset. Day. You have to have a great mind. In sales in general, I mean, if you don't have the mindset, like I said earlier, you're going to get...
What's the mindset?
The core values, like I said,
yeah.
Being ruthless. Mm-hmm. Having the resilience on bad days. One thing the question I always ask to people that when I qualify them for it to be a part of our team is, what happens if a deal blows up? What if nobody's answering? What if you got cursed out? How do you handle those days? Mm. Right? I mean, obviously, that's just sales in general. That's not just our industry, right? So how are you going to handle this? And again, that goes back into our last year of all the learning, all the hires, the different types of hires. I've seen so many different personalities that I've learned and now I can look out for before we hire them. We have hired somebody where they just had a terrible mindset. It was a bad day. Their mindset was so bad it affected the entire office. Mm-hmm. But we need the people that obviously have resilience. Again, it's one of our core values. And it goes back to that people analyzer that we talked about earlier. So if I see my, one of my guys and they had a bad day, and then I got the coming up month and I'm going to go say, okay, how does he line up with the resilience part of one of our core values? Mm-hmm. And if he didn't handle that day right, you know, terribly, then I'm going to say he didn't handle it very well. I get to line him up with our core values. But if I say, hey, and it doesn't mean you're going to be obviously shining and smiling and rainbows and all the time. Don't get me wrong. But I want to see what was the ruthlessness. What was the mindset during that time, right? We're a team. One of our core values is teamwork, right? Now we got about 8 core values, but one of them is teamwork. We're always helping each other. If you hang around with our office long enough, you'll see everybody's collaborating. Mm-hmm. Everybody's helping to get deals to the finish line. We're not a sharky environment. There is a healthy competition, but everybody's collaborating and helping each other getting deals to the finish line.
Yeah, having that win mentality and seeing everybody win is super important, especially here.
Yeah, I love it. I'm super appreciative that you guys have diving deep into everything with me. It was a ton of fun.
Yeah, no, of course.
Hopefully can answer your questions. And like I said, this is just, you know, this is being real, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy feat on building a team. It's not an easy feat of being just a sole acquisition person or a person that's trying to get deals, right? Mm-hmm. You need to be – it's one of my things that you know, what's your – and when I'm in a podcast, what's your closing remarks? And my thing is always be obsessed. You must be obsessed about whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's how you see all these books behind me. I'm obsessed with reading, obsessed with meeting new people, obsessed with collaborating with the people on your team. I'm obsessed with, you know, looking for not thinking you're too good to find coaches and mentors, right? When I first started, I'm still doing it. Matter of fact, I want to hire Cody to be my one-on-one. We'll see if that happens. Mm-hmm. But you know, really looking for that guidance to really level up every day. It's just like what I said earlier, the John Maxwell, you know, there's the lid, right? You want to make sure that your leadership, you keep leveling up so you could keep, you know, lifting up that lid for your team. So,
mm-hmm. Yep, totally understood. Appreciate it a ton. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.